Exploitation is a very big issue within the United Kingdom's health and social care system, and it comes in many forms. This ranges from unlawful debt traps of thousands of pounds to a simple but more hidden type of exploitation, which is overworking an overqualified person and severely underpaying them. Now, these exploitations are not the only types, but there are many forms. But the question today is, with so many trade unions out there, e.g. the CSP, you have the Nurses Trade Union, you have each other healthcare profession trade unions, what can these organizations do to fight against exploitation, and what do they actually offer, particularly geared towards international recruits who may actually suffer from these types of exploitation, because we all know that is clearly illegal. So today I bring you, without any further ado, someone from one of these trade unions, Alex McKenzie.
Much. Thank you for having me. So I am Alex McKenzie, and I am the chair of the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much, Alex, for coming again. Now, I know we already had a brief chat beforehand, and you know, one of the reasons, and I'll jump straight into it in the line of questioning, because it's around international healthcare and international recruitment, particularly in the UK, which is the CSP, which is Chartered Society of Physiotherapists, one of the many trade unions at the forefront of this, you know, lobbying and making a strong case for increased pay, international recruitment, and etc., alongside nurses and other healthcare professionals. One thing I do find interesting is that a recent, but it's not a new issue, is exploitation in healthcare, in particularly in recruitment of international staff. Now, some people may not be familiar with this because I think there is underreporting of this for many reasons, which we might get into later on. But at the moment now, what is your knowledge about exploitation within the healthcare recruitment setting? You can be specific to physiotherapy or across healthcare in general.
So any knowledge I have is around physiotherapy. And I think there's sort of two aspects to it. I mean, I think for those coming over and working in the NHS, I know that some have expressed, disappointment that quite often, whilst they have quite a lot of experience from their country, they're coming in and having to start at a much lower graded level. So, band five or band six, rather than sort of more in line with their experience within the role in their own country. And some would see that obviously as a degree of exploitation. However, obviously within the NHS pay system, for the grade that you are appointed to, the pay is set across the board. The more serious exploitation has been more in the private sector, and something that we've become aware of, which is where clinic owners have encouraged people from overseas to come over on a certain contract. However, sort of when they get here, then their pay is significantly less than what they thought they were agreeing to. And the issue there is their visa is tied to their place of work. So they're not really speaking out about it. So it's been talked about in private chats, but it's not easy to get to grips with, because people are afraid to speak out, because if they do, maybe their visa would end up being revoked.
Yeah, I think that one you mentioned, that I know I said it is something I think is strongly underreported. It's rampant, and to get people to speak out about it, you'll probably see articles here and there, or when you have private conversations with individuals, you either have to anonymize their names, or you can't even, you know, for their own protection as well, you can't mention certain things like, you know, where they work, the area, because it's a very big risk to someone in that setting. And it's very interesting you mentioned, and I did think about it as well, the difference between the private and the NHS sector, because, you know, we'll touch on the first part of the exploitation in a bit, but that second part of where it's more rampant in the private sector as opposed to the NHS, is my knowledge is because it's the NHS as is a more structured organization in terms that, you know, you're coming in as a physiotherapist, you cannot, you know, as a qualified physiotherapist, you cannot go lower than a band 5, you know. So that's where that first part of exploitation will come into play, you know, where you may be, you know, you're probably supposed to be, you think you are qualified for a senior role or a high senior role, but you're giving that band 5. And I've seen that. But the other part of it, which is the people who are in private sectors that cannot speak out or having troubles because of the nature of it. You know, how are we supposed to, you know, tackle this? I know we're jumping the gun ahead in the sense of that, but it's such an interesting point because a lot of individuals are in this space now and there's no law reporting about it, but there's articles here and there. You know, how can we, you know, what's a solution that we can even see for this as a problem, which we'll probably cover more a bit later on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult in that with the underreporting of it, of how do you deal with something like that? I mean, obviously, the CSP would take any reports seriously, and they have been working with individuals who have had it reported to them to try and sort of see, can we, you know, persuade people to talk to us or to give us some information. But like we said, the problem is people are scared. You know, this is genuine exploitation, and people have spent money to come over here. They've possibly paid out huge sums of money to come over to get their visas on the basis of something that then doesn't exist. That they are then being exploited in terms of, you know, pay. We're talking about people, you know, maybe being paid something like £6.50 an hour for, you know, skilled physiotherapy treatment. And, you know, that doesn't in any way reflect what we would expect somebody, you know, to be paid and what they expected to be paid coming over. As an organisation, obviously, if anybody directly reported it to us, we would then look to deal with it as best we can. The biggest problem is we have no influence over visas. So that's part of the problem is, you know, the CSP has no influence with the Home Office or over any kind of visa side of things. So we can't give anybody any assurance in terms of what might happen. And that's what is a certain amount of holding it back. I mean, I think by raising awareness of this and what we have been doing by talking about it, by putting it out there, by making it more in the members' domain, you know, so public domain, you know, so people understand it, is hopefully allowing people to potentially call it out if they have any idea of where it's actually happening. But without people coming directly to the CSP, we're somewhat limited in what we can do, apart from what we did last week, which is talk about it at the Trades Union Congress, where the CSP had a delegation. And we were talking about this in terms of looking with other health unions and with the wider trade union movement as to how we can try and eliminate this side of things.
Yeah, because I think you're right, where it's the core issue where you will find, obviously, one of the core issues is there's underreporting of it. So, you know, it's very difficult to make a super strong case and say these are the amount of people, because people will not come out, because as well, if it's brought to light and we don't have any influence, or the CSP or trade unions don't have any influence or with regards to visas, you know, there's no incentive for someone to risk what they have now, even though it's a poor situation. You know, to some individuals, it's a lot worse to go back to where they came from because they've already spent so much to come here, you know. And I know this in case where, you know, people are paying fees that they're not supposed to be paying. For example, you're told you need to pay the cost letter fee, which is a certificate of sponsorship letter, which is actually supposed to be paid by the employer, but they are putting that burden on the employee. So you've paid about £2,000 to get a letter that your employer was supposed to pay for already. Then you have to come here, pay for accommodation. And then on top of that, what happens is I think they take it out of their salary and say you can work it back. And, you know, in some extreme cases, which I've seen articles on, I think Nursing Times and et cetera, you know, passports are held and visas and, you know, there's threats that of this type of thing. So it's very, very tricky. Plus, I don't think it was something that has been, you know, I'd say years before, even up to very recently, something that was widely spoken about in public, you know, spaces. So which is why I was very interested when I saw it being held at, being spoken about at a trade union talk where you have different disciplines and different professionals and trade unions talking about this as a big issue, which I think is a very important thing that more information needs to be put out there, because for individuals who find themselves in this situation. But also, as you mentioned, is a clear line of solution where, you know, someone who puts themselves out there is not immediately put at risk for their livelihood. And then, you know, have everything turned upside down, which will ultimately demoralize other individuals to come out and speak about it at this time. Obviously, the CSP works, and, you know, we take, as you said, you take every case seriously. But is there any particular reason, out of curiosity, why is this something that has just recently come on the radar for trade unions, or is this something that has been battling for years? And, you know, it's a very tricky question, but you've been about 4 years now. How has your experience with this particular issue been so far?
So I think from our perspective, from the CSP, this is something that's come more recently onto our radar. This is not something we were that aware of before. And again, it's back to the lack of speaking out. As the trade union movement, obviously, you know, people have been aware of what is modern slavery for some time. And certainly in different sectors, different industries, this has been on the trade union radar for some time in terms of ensuring that we call it out where it is, that we do our best to ensure that, you know, that it can't happen, that we have ways of looking into industries to see, you know, whether this is what's happening. But the difficulty is just as you described there. You know, if people don't have access to their passports, if they have paid out a certain amount of money anyway, you know, they're reluctant to then do something that means they've just lost that money. You know, there are all sorts of reasons why people don't speak out. There's no fault on the individual for you know, being cautious in terms of that. You know, it makes it more difficult to deal with, but people have to look after, you know, themselves first of all. So it is something that's newer on the CSP's agenda. And I think with the other health unions that this has come to light. But it's not new to the general trade union movement.
Yeah, and the word you called it, which is what it is. It's a form of modern slavery in terms where, you know, any situation where someone is made vulnerable, working for way less than what they are actually worth, having, you know, situations where their passport is held against them, and, you know, they're basically trapped almost both psychologically and almost to some extent physically in the setting that they are to pay back fees. And a big one issue is the information. Some people might not know that, you know, some of those fees that they're paying are actually not meant to be paid by them. You know, they've gone through third party systems, and those third party systems have a very malicious intent to make as much money from both sides, both the employer and the employee at the same time, in all sorts of shady practices, which, you know, as you mentioned, causes huge concern. And now it's, I imagine, with things. I just hope that, you know, in terms of the bureaucracy of, you know, of systems and multiple systems, is this something that you can see being picking up more steam? Obviously, we are in a time now, you know, both politically and cost of living crisis and multiple fronts, you know, CSP and other trade unions are battling multiple issues, you know, from increasing in wages to this. I hope this is not something that, you know, gets buried under, you know, the other elements of it, that is something that we can actually take meaningful actions, you know, as the trade union conference you went to. What was the outlook, the future outlook? What did it seem like from both your perspective of CSP and other unions? What was it looking like the action plan of actions were?
Well, the Trade Union Congress is the forum in which, in essence, the unions set the agenda for the next year. So this motion was passed. So the motion that we had looking into this issue about the treatment of overseas recruits has been taken, will be taken by the TUC as an organisation to action. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a tricky time. You know, there's lots of disputes going on, mostly around the cost of living, you know, in terms of, you know, whether it's sort of the rail disputes, the postal workers, and obviously we ourselves are in the NHS are currently balloting for industrial action in Scotland, England and Wales. You know, so all of that is important, but it doesn't mean other things aren't important. And there is a lot of work that will be sort of going on. And, you know, a lot of, I'm going to say that there's a lot of sort of negotiating. There's a lot of discussions that happen, I'm going to say, slightly behind closed doors where, you know, the TUC will be lobbying the government, you know, in terms of some of these issues, in terms of how we can have changes, you know, and that's what they do. And they look out for all workers. So, you know, that does mean that if there's issues going on that have been raised with them, they will be then taking that forward. From the CSP's point of view, again, you know, we are willing and ready to act if we have something concrete to act on. And this is one of those sort of difficulties, you know, that we were talking about, you know, that if people come to us and they are our members, then, you know, we will definitely act. If there are people who are exploiting who are our members, we will ensure we act, you know. So there is something there. Obviously, as the CSP, if they're not our members, it doesn't mean we're complete, you know, that we're going to wash our hands and say it's nothing to do with us. We would then be talking to the HCPC. I mean, we would anyway, but, you know, we would be looking to say, actually, this is our profession, this matters, you know, this is it's about the integrity of our profession. So, you know, it matters. And we have been starting those conversations anyway, you know, with the likes of the HCPC, because if we get any intelligence on it, then obviously we would want to be clear that something can happen.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, that's very interesting you mentioned about that. Again, you know, regards to if they are in the CSP or not, it's still a physiotherapy profession, which I think we'll come on to towards the, you know, I know that's a loaded question I have for you towards the end, which is why membership people should join the CSP and, you know, what the benefit is. But while we're still on this topic about the exploitation, it's very interesting. You know, I think one thing that would be very good is, you know, the more we start to publicize this message about making people be aware of, you know, that you are being exploited, or, you know, are you a qualified individual getting underpaid significantly, you know, compared to other people, you know, what the fair wage for your profession is. It starts to make it a bit more easy and makes it more open where people can speak out. The other part of exploitation, and again, this topic's, you know, it's not just a one-off where we have a conversation now for, you know, whatever time we use now, and then it's the end of it. Something, it has to be an ongoing conversation so that more people are aware about it. But the other part of exploitation, which you mentioned, was people coming from abroad. Even with this is also, you know, sadly an issue. This is an issue, NHS, both NHS and private, where, you know, someone might come abroad with 10 years of experience as a physiotherapist and working as a senior physiotherapist in Nigeria, India, Pakistan, somewhere else. They've gotten their, you know, registration with HCPC and they've come here, but they're starting at a band 5 level. Now, for me, I think it's very unfair and very, you know, it's a form of exploitation because they're being asked to work at a junior level where they're a senior. Now, there is reasons I've heard as this happens, but I'm not going to give that lead yet. I want to hear what you have to say about it first, and I'll give my own two cents. Now, what is your thoughts on this? As because it happens, and it happens on a daily basis, on a regular recruitment basis, where people coming from abroad are automatically sent to, you know, most of the time, right? Not all the time. I know some who've come in the band 6 role, but most of the time they come into a band 5 role.
Yes, I mean, I think there's difficulty there with our recruitment practices. You know, there are certain things that we would often see, like, you know, experience in the NHS, as being a kind of essential for band six and above. So obviously if somebody hasn't, got experience in the NHS, that's a reason given to end up, putting them in at a band five. I think it's also understanding what other health services, health organizations from abroad actually are, what is the work, what's happening. And I think it does, it very much comes down to the recruitment and the understanding of those people interviewing and those people doing the recruitment in terms of actually taking time to understand where somebody's really coming from. And also understanding that, there's a certain type of answering a question that you can learn when you're born and brought up in the system, that isn't afforded to somebody who's coming in from abroad. So you're going to hear different answers. You're going to hear a different way of expressing themselves. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have the experience, knowledge and skills to be able to work at a higher level. So I think that there's a lot within that. And I think a lot of that comes into bias. It's both those obvious bias, but also that less, call it unconscious bias, where people don't realize that they're actually judging people on a standard that isn't equal, that it is their own, this is the way we would ask a question, and this is the kind of response that we're looking for, rather than actually looking more, I'm going to say, some of it's not the capability, it's the competencies, there we go, that actually sort of trying to establish that a little bit more. So there's lots of things within that. And I would actually say that there's some quite good stuff from the CSP about that as well, that's starting to come out a bit more from, helped with a number of our members who are, have come from abroad in terms of, having then been, I'm going to say, in the system, of being able to see where that disconnect comes from, to be able to point managers sort of recruiting in this country to where they may be making those assumptions, those biases.
Yeah. And, you mentioned quite a few things that I, and again, this type of issue is, obviously I'd say I was called a privileged individual where I already was studying in the UK. And so I don't know my placements in the NHS setting. So, it wasn't hard for me going, because I was basically almost the same as anybody who had done 3 years in university here going into a healthcare setting. But individuals coming from abroad, and there is that bias. There is the level of bias of, be it one thing where, okay, someone is coming from a country where you're maybe a healthcare system where they're familiar with, be it a European country or an American country, versus someone coming from a whole different system that interviewers or the whole system of recruitment is not too familiar with, how their own healthcare system works. So the automatic idea is, they don't have NHS experience, so let's start them low and see if they can work their way up after gaining NHS experience. Whereas I don't particularly agree. I see why that logic is there. Do I agree with it? Not particularly. And the reasons I don't agree with it particularly is because, someone with 10 years of physiotherapy experience, and if the HEPC has, looked at all the documents and deemed them competent as physiotherapists, based off their degree, their work experience, multiple factors of recruitment, they should be offered the opportunity, be it, if they come and say, I want to be a senior role, they should have that opportunity, be it as a senior role person directly, which I know it does happen because I have colleagues who are straight from Nigeria who work in senior roles, but also if there are questions around, they may not know the full system where, they should come into that role, but be on a developmental. That's why we have, probationary periods where, within a period of time, 6 months is a very good amount of time for someone to ingratiate and understand to an extent the healthcare system. If you work in an area, I'm sure you know, Alex, if you work in an area for 6 months, at the end of the 6 months, you're not still going to be confused about where you're working at the time. So I think it's part of that core recruitment strategy and plan that actually limits, and it does happen. I mean, obviously, from a trade union's perspective, do these cases It's very tricky, I know, I imagine, to try and change it from even CSP, because it's almost, you know, trust to trust level, as well as, you know, policies and etc. But I know these topics are being had now more and more often about the looking into international recruitment for multiple reasons, which we'll talk about later. But from a CSP perspective and a trade union, you know, how much influence can you have in these type of issues where, you know, changes to recruitment practices? I know you can put out guidelines or, you know, articles about, you know, how the things should be. But is there any more, or are your hands tied as well in this area?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Our hands are more tied because the individual employers are the ones doing the recruitment. So all we can do is raise the awareness. We've got a lot of information out there for managers recruiting from abroad. We've got information for people who join the CSP sort of prior to coming over, in terms of, you know, again, information for somebody sort of starting out from abroad. We also, you know, have been putting stuff through our stewards network in terms of this aspect of it. You know, generally, I was going to say, you know, sort of racial bias for them to feed through their organisations as well. So, you know, there is stuff out there, but no, our direct influence on recruitment practices is far more limited, because each employer, you know, can have their own. As such, you know, so it's not then easy to influence in that way. What we need then is the CSP as its members. The members are then sort of trying to get change within each of their employers. You know, so that's the best method to change sort of employer practices.
Yeah, okay, and which is fair, which I, you know, I can understand being from a reasonable perspective that, you know, for example, if a member, you know, which we'll come into, I know we say, but it's very important when we come into why someone should even join, you know, the CSP. But am I right in saying that if someone who international person, immigrant, comes to UK, finds out, you know, okay, they've taken a band 5 job, but they then feel that, you know, with the years of experience they have and the job they're asked to do, you know, at a junior level, and being told, oh, you have to, you know, do the 1 year at least before you can go, if they were to raise an issue and say, you know, this doesn't feel right with the CSP, as if they were a CSP member, as their, you know, trade union, would you then be able to speak on their behalf or join talks if they were having talks with, you know, for example, HR, HCPC, whoever, and they were saying, you know, something doesn't seem right here, would you in that capacity be able to represent?
Yes. So, you know, if they're a member of the CSP, then yes, if they have any issues over their employment, once they're in employment, then yes, we would be able to sort of support them with that. So yes, that's where we do get involved as such.
Okay. No, that is a fair point, because I was thinking about it that, you know, someone in that position as well, you know, they might not know what to do. They might just think that this is how it's supposed to be, and it may only be until they have a conversation with someone else who is a senior or someone like myself and says, you know, that might not be right. But then there are not many people, and this is not blowing my own toe, there are not many people who they might have a conversation with, like myself or someone else like you, who might tell them, this is actually what you are supposed to be, this is the level you're supposed to probably be working at, and this junior level is, and you know, the bureaucracy of it is not, it's not ideal for your experience or level of experience coming from a manager or from here to then doing a junior post.
Yeah, what I would say is the one difficulty with that is obviously once somebody is in a post, if there isn't a higher graded post available, then it's going to be hard potentially just to get them moved up based on their experience. However, that doesn't mean it couldn't be tried. It doesn't mean the conversations can't be had. It doesn't mean that there isn't a possibility to give them some support within that. So, you know, it's just saying it might not solve all the problems, but there is certainly support that can be given.
And that's, I think that's an important thing, that there is some level of support, and you know, someone else will be there with them to have their back, you know, because coming from abroad is never an easy thing when you have to uproot your whole life across, knowing that there will be someone there to at least, you know, you can rely on and say, okay, if you at least, you know, they try to support you. And again, if you said, if there's no post available, but if there is and that conversation is had, it might even help that trust. Recruitment policy, maybe they need to relook at it, and this might be a case where they say, okay, have we been doing something wrong, or have we been doing something, let's change things going forward, which will be very interesting to say the very least. We're going to take a slight break now, for those who are listening, and then we will come back where I ask Alex some more, I don't know if these are heavy questions, but very, very serious topics. So much appreciated, Alex. I hope you enjoy the podcast episode, but also make sure to subscribe to the Brooks Health Podcast on YouTube as well as the podcast so you don't miss another episode, but also follow us on social media at Rooks Health. Till the next video on the Rooks Health Podcast.